we went out there and she did the race and it was like, you know, 100 miles. And I just remember like she crossed the finish line and she was just so pumped. Like,
oh, that's
just
awesome.
Fist pumping. And like, and then I remember she told me at the end of that day, she's like, hey, she goes, this works. Like, oh, I'll tell you right now, like, I was dealing with a bunch of shit before this race. I've never felt more like I wanted to use again. And then it just went away. You're onto something. This works. You keep doing it. And so I was like, okay, like, there you have it. Like, here's someone who's early in the recovery, had a big stressor right before this event, said she wanted to use, did the event, and like literally was on the bike and the bike cleared that for her. And so that was like when Griff and I were just like, okay, this is awesome.
It's showtime, everybody! Showtime!
You've been living in a dream world, Neo.
Yeah.
This is the world as it exists today.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.
Listen, we talking about practice.
Hey, Pete, on the dude's rug.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
I see. You think this has nothing to do with you.
Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus.
This is the Adventure Stash with Payson McKelvin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I have a really fun interview today with two guys that I've known for quite a while. Brothers, the Easter brothers, Griffin and Cullen. I first got to know these guys racing collegiate, I guess a decade ago at this point. Griffin and I were on the Fort Lewis College team together. We actually were on the national championship winning team time trial team together way back when. His brother Cullen was on Colorado Mesa University at the same time, so we were doing battle against him. But these two guys have always been an incredible dynamic duo, two of the funniest guys I know, and also two of the most talented bike racers. Over the last few years, Griffin has popped off some really incredible results all over the world. He won a stage at the notorious Vuelta Colombia. Cullen shares an absolutely ridiculous story of the time that he went from being a Category 3 road racer to Chris Horner's number one mountain domestique, mountain lieutenant in the Tour of Utah in a span of just a handful of months. Pretty crazy. Their paths kind of diverged a handful of years ago as Cullen pursued nursing school and Griffin pursued road racing at the highest level. But over the last year or two, their paths have come back together in a big way as they founded Opicure Foundation and now are basing all of their extra time around it and even a lot of their professional time too, as Griffin kind of blends the lines between racing and foundation work. And Cullen will be making a comeback to racing this year too, it sounds like, which is really, really exciting. I'm looking forward to racing with both of them this year. I want to say a big thank you to Dometic for supporting today's episode. One of the things that we've most enjoyed over the last year is using Dometic's Go products. So this is an amazing collection of products they make that are designed for easy camping, easy transport, kind of everyday use. Just makes grabbing your outdoor gear simple. Whether you're packing up neatly in the back of your car to hit the road or stack all of these items to store until you're ready to embark on your next adventure, the Dometic Go line of products is designed to be easy to store, pack, and carry. And as crazy as it may sound, one of our favorite items in this collection is their camp blanket. You might ask, well, why do I need a special camp blanket? Well, as you may or may not have noticed over the years, there's some annoying little scenarios that can happen with camp blankets. If you're out on a picnic, maybe some pokey things are stabbing you through the blanket, or it might get soaked because of some wet grass. Dometic has thought about these issues and come up with some pretty awesome solutions. And they have this dual surface construction that's soft on top, but waterproof and rugged on the bottom. So you can use it as a picnic blanket, personal blanket, or even as a weather shelter. Super, super cool design. If you go to dometic.com/outdoor/dometic-go, You can check out this full line of products. And if you use code STASH23, you can get yourself 15% off anything in that Go line of products. That's just STASH23. Thanks again to Dometic for supporting the podcast headed into this new year. They were an incredible supporter last year, and we're so excited to have them on board again. Thank you all so much for listening today, and we'll catch you after the show. All right, guys. Cool. Let's catch up a little bit. We go way back. it's funny that we go way back because I feel like time flies. It's crazy. It's been 10 years that I've known you guys at this point, I think, or longer even. Griffin and Cullen, the dynamic brother duo. We go back to the collegiate racing days. I guess, first of all, I'm curious where each of you, I know Griffin, where you're joining us from, but Cullen, where are you these days? Are you in Grand Junction?
No, I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah now.
Salt Lake.
Yep.
Nice. When did you move to Salt Lake?
So I moved out here while I was racing with collegiately in Colorado. I was also getting my nursing degree. And then I think it was around 2017, 2018 was when I got, you know, my nursing license. And then I came up here and started working like 2018, 2019, okay. I think. Yeah.
Wow. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Like I said, time flies. Griff, I know, just finished out the shootout in Tucson a couple of hours ago.
Yes.
How was it today? Who threw down?
Well, I can't complain too much, but it was cold. It was okay. I'm not in Utah. I'm down here in Southern Arizona, but it's pretty cold this morning. I think it was 28 degrees.
Oh,
And I think by the end of it, it was in like the low 50s, high 40s. And so it was a pretty crisp morning. It started out, it wasn't as big as the rollout from last week when you were out here, but it was still a dedicated group of fast guys and girls. And yeah, the way out was ripping. I was kind of just like, my legs felt like blocks, and so I was kind of just hanging on. But yeah, the normal suspects were throwing down, and then we headed up Madera, and that was a little bit better for me than last weekend. And then the way up, way back, we go up Helmet Peak and then back into town, and we had a pretty good group all day, so it was a lot of fun. Tired, but always a good time to get yeah. that. It's like 3 miles, you know? So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. So obviously you're full gas training right now. Cullen, it sounds like, we'll talk about this more in a minute, but you're doing more training now than you were last year too, which is exciting. For those that aren't familiar with you guys, in my mind, you've always kind of been this like dynamic brother duo. I think it was Sarah Sturm. And yeah, I think it was Sarah that was commenting one time just how much fun it is to be around you guys when you're together. Cause you're just like this, the way you both have such an amazing sense of humor, and the way you play off of each other is just like nonstop. It's amazing. But back in the day when we were racing collegiate together, you guys were on different teams. Obviously I was with Griffin at Fort Lewis, Cullen, you were at Mesa.
Yep.
In Grand Junction. Can you guys talk a little bit about how you got into cycling and how you ended up going to different schools? Was there ever any talk about both going to FLC or both going to Mesa? How did all that play out now, like a decade ago?
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. So Griffin was already at Fort Lewis College. And I had been working as an EMT in the emergency department and on the ambulance. And that was right around the time when I started thinking about nursing school, while Griff was still in school out in Fort Lewis. And so I had a friend, Reese Kagans, who he's actually the club sports director over at CMU or at Mesa, Colorado Mesa. And he came home to visit back home one day, and I was telling him that I was interested in nursing school, but that California was like, it was insane, the wait list times, like just to get into a program, it was like even if your grades were great and you were, you know, a fantastic student, it was like this 2-year wait list. And so started kind of looking outside of California. Like, and I'd heard that there was other school, you know, obviously other schools everywhere that have great programs. And Reese told me, he's like, oh, you got to come to Colorado Mesa. Like, they've got a great nursing program. The place is unreal. Like, there's outdoor stuff, there's skiing, there's, you know, biking. And so I was like, all right, I'll come out and visit. And that, you know, that was like, that was it. It was history after that visit. And it was just cool to know that I had a feeling I'd get into the collegiate cycling. And then I knew that we'd be, Griff and I would be racing kind of, against each other, but at least with each other going to the, a lot of the same events. So that's kind of how I found Colorado Mesa and started my journey over there.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So for a little bit more background, Griff and I actually raced, team time trials together pretty decently. And obviously I would always see Colin at the road races and crits, and we'd be going against each other in the TTTs. But, Griffin was like definitely the engine, typically in our team time trial. And there was a year in Utah where we won the national title, and I actually got dropped during that national title win. So you, for those that don't know, you race collegiate team time trials with four riders and you have to finish with three. And we had an awesome team, and, yeah, Griff was like the man in that TTT. super good memories. But one thing I was always curious about was, and also you went on to win an individual national title, right, Griff, in the road race?
Yeah. Yeah, I did eventually. Yeah. So
a year or two later,
a couple of years later, it was like my last year at Fort Lewis College. It was the collegiate nationals was at Richmond, Virginia. And it was a test. It was a test run of world championships that they were going to have the following year. And so we kind of did the circuit more or less of what they were going to do for the UCI Worlds road race. And I ended up kind of, taking the win at that race. So it was like it was a wild race, though. We had kind of, you know, you start the day and you think you're going to, you know, ride well, but it was one of those days where like your legs and your whole body was like, nothing was firing right. You just felt bad. It wasn't like, you're like, oh man, this is going to be a tough day. And then, you know, as the day goes on, things start to open up more. And then I'd gotten a flat tire and up this like kind of twisting, like brick cobbled road. Colin actually did the nationals there too. But Ian Burnett, at the top of the climb of that, he like got me a wheel. He was the he was the cycling director at the time, and I think he still is at Fort Lewis. But he got me a wheel, and it was like the perfect like snap out of it mode. Like getting that wheel change and like talking with him real quickly, and him pushing me off, kind of got me back focused in on the race at hand. And then I ended up bridging back with a few other people, and when we reconnected with the front group, there was this lull. And as soon as it lulled, I just like, I made a move, went up the side of the road. And then, Tim Aiken from Stanford, he came with me, and then it was just us two. And we had like, I don't know what the gap was, but we went to the line at the very end. And then, and like the last climb, we had Cullen cheer me on, cause he was in the different division than we were in. So you had already either finished your race or it was another day. I can't remember really.
Yeah, finished and on the side cheering.
Yeah, he was wearing this like really cool like Hawaiian t-shirt, I think, but he had a backwards hat on, and he's on the climb just like, come on, Grant, let's go.
That's awesome.
And then I was like super nervous and like out of my a little out of my element, like, dude, this might happen, because it was the last major climb. And then that was when Dave Hagen, who's like the cycling overall director at the time, he was on the side of the road, and he was just like super cool, super calm. And he's like, all right, Griffer, let's go. And it was like,
classic.
I just like got super relaxed. I was like, oh, this is no big deal. Like, this is just a ride. And then, I ended up like jumping Tim at the very end and took the win. So it was a good day.
That's awesome. That's cool. One thing I've always been curious about, it's all kind of coming back to me now, all these great collegiate racing memories. But even back then, one thing I always remember being curious about is what it was like for you guys to race against each other. Like, obviously at nationals with D1 and D2, sometimes you weren't racing head to head, but throughout the majority of the Rocky Mountain, you know, collegiate cycling conference season, you guys were racing against each other.
Yeah.
Was that, I mean, you guys are from the outside, you're always so lighthearted that it's hard for me to believe that there was ever any like tension there per se, but what was that like for you guys?
To me, it never really felt, the way I felt was like almost as if we were teammates, like, cause that's how I've always, when we were in the group, it was like, we were talking to each other. I'd be asking, okay, what are you thinking? What, like, you know, how are we going to do this? And then I think like the perfect example of when that all fell away was at Fort Collins on the oval crit. Griff and I attacked and the two of us went off the front, and it was great because the two big teams were Fort Lewis and CMU that were representing that day. So mm-hmm. It was just like, it, like those two teams canceled out the chase. And so Griff and I were just the two of us off the front. And I think, like, it was great. It was just like we were working together, like just trading poles,
sharing poles.
Yeah, like it was the most fun I've ever had in a bike race. And then I remember it's that long descent down the oval. You make the turn up and then the finish is on the, you know, upside of that street. And as we were getting close to it, I was like, Griff goes, well, what do you think, dude? Like, do you want this? And I was like, I go, dude, are you kidding me? I go, we're sprinting this out. And then he goes, oh, all right. And so then we're like, you know, coming into this turn, and then boom, and we go for it. And we're like, and then Griff got it. And so, but it was like, other than that, every race that we ever did together, it was like, I felt like we were just teammates. Cause I was just stoked that we were getting to race together. And then it would always split at nationals. So it was always like, you know, any way you looked at it, we could be helping each other in those collegiate races. And then it transferred into, you know, Griff got onto Airgas Safeway, and that's kind of how I, you know, he got me onto that team. So it's always kind of been, you know, as we've been racing professionally, we were always on the same team. So that's been super cool. But yeah, it was never really like, you know, like it was always just fun racing those races. It was like you know how those weekends were. It was like those weekends were the best. Like it was a break from school. You had to have, you know, host housing, good food, hanging out with everybody, jammed into minivans, and those minivans were insane, like, you know. So it was fun.
Yeah, and with Fort Lewis and CMU, it was like, I don't know, 6 or 7 15-pack vans just lined up on the highways. We were like some sort of weird like government brigade just headed back to our respective hometowns.
And the Fort Lewis minivans, I always remember whenever you guys were leaving, it would always be some type of like peeling out and then taking off.
Yeah, with the mountain biker roots, it was always a bit hectic. A little bit of a rally car driving going on. Cool. So following collegiate, it seemed like you kind of had some different paths that you gradually started taking. You spent, like you said, a couple of years racing on the same Conti, Pro Conti teams. Were you on Illuminate together for a bit as well?
Yep.
And then Griff, you kind of made the leap over to Europe for a bit of time, I think. And Colin, it seemed like you started to focus more on med school. Can you talk a little bit about that phase? Like, did your relationship stay the same? Did you guys keep in touch kind of with your respective goals? How did that sort of play out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my time in CMU, a lot of the time was doing prerequisites for nursing school. And then once nursing school hit, that was a 2.5-year program. And that's when I was still racing, but Griff was doing a lot of racing and I was doing like, Chris Johnson, the way that he would work it out on Team Illuminate, he'd be like, okay, pick a couple races you want to do. And then we'll take you to those races. So it was always like difficult for me because I was doing nursing school full time, trying to train and then showing up to these like, you know, bigger stage races and trying to perform. And so that's kind of been how I've raced. Pretty much the majority of all of my racing has always been like doing one thing and racing. And mm-hmm. so it's always been tough to like, always wonder like, oh, if I could just go all in and see kind of what it would be like. But I really love, you know, as I was doing nursing school, it was like, I was finding that I was just as excited about nursing as I was about racing. And so that was kind of cool to see that I was really good at nursing. And, you know, so it was fun. And then, you know, I think that Griffin and I, we've always just stayed. I mean, he was always kind of like, I was his go-to person that he would call like at the big races to kind of talk through stuff. And, you know, I think that that's always been how we've operated, is just like, we are like a good duo in that, you know, if he's having a hard time, I can kind of talk him through stuff and vice versa. And so, that period of time is when Griff really kind of started taking off. And I think getting the big races and like getting that experience in his legs kind of taken off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Griff, can you talk a little bit about making that leap to the higher levels of road racing? Cause I remember, you know, you'd be off doing these crazy races like Vuelta Colombia or Tour of Azerbaijan. And I just remember like once or twice a year, you just pop off a result. And just be like, damn, Griffin is like somewhere super far away racing a bunch of absolute hitters, and he just podiumed, or like he just won. Like when you won that stage, dude, I'll never forget watching the finish of that Vuelta Colombia stage. I was just like, oh my God, how did he go down there to this area where like the racing plays by completely different rules and just found a way to win? Can you kind of give us some insight into those few years where you were, before you started moving into the gravel scene, where you were traveling globally and just racing at some absolutely insane events?
Yeah. Well, thanks first off, but so the time where things started to click was when Chris Horner was our teammate, 2015. And it was at Tour de Azerbaijan, and he was out there, and I was just super gung-ho, you know, trying to get into breakaways, stupidly trying to get into breakaways, just wasting matches, wasting energy. And he came up, it was the fourth stage, and he came up and he goes, dude, you gotta relax. He goes, I'll let you know when you need to go into the break. And I was like,
that was a really
okay.
good Horner impersonation.
And so we're cruising along, and he's like it was one of those days where it takes like hour and a half for the breakaway finally to go. And it was blisteringly fast, you know, just strung out. And I'm like, he can tell I'm just like, I'm antsy, like I should go. And he's like, not yet, it's too fast. It's way too fast. You'd have to do, you know, they're going like 35, you'd have to go 40. No way. And so finally there was like a lull, and he's like, all right, go. And so like it was like I went, and then I was in the breakaway. So
whoa, experience is crazy.
I know it's crazy. But yeah, so that was the first time, and that breakaway stayed to the finish. So it was four of us, and it was Connor Dunn, who's that really well, he works for GCN now, he's one of their announcers, but he's like 6'5" or 6'7", and I was behind him all day. That was my wheel in the rotation.
Nice.
And then there was this other kid, Daniel Turek, and he might be, I don't know where he's from, but he's you know, like Eastern European rider. And then there was a Turkish rider and one other guy, because there was four of us. But it came down to, like, I was doing everything by the end. I was doing everything I could just to stay on their wheels. And then when it finally came to sprint, I just, like, the wheels came off and I finished fourth. But that was, like, the first time where it clicked. And then the rest of the season, we got to race with Horner. And I learned, the most I ever learned was within that season. Mm-hmm. Because you're getting somebody that has, he's, like, tactically, he's a genius. Like, he just knows how to read a race. He knows how to gauge an effort. He knows how to read people on the bike. And that was what we kind of got that opportunity that year to learn from him. And yeah, because like up until that point, I'd been on like teams, but I wasn't ever on like the big teams where you're mm-hmm. kind of getting that experience from those, all those different, you know, riders that have had so much a lifetime of experience. So it was always like I was doing a lot of races, but I wasn't really learning. And then that year, everything kind of started to click more. And then that year, Cullen got a call up after doing Cascade. So Cascade was, I didn't do that because I had done Tour of Qinghai Lake. But there was a group of guys on the team that at the same time were going to go out to Cascade, and it was going to be kind of a who's gonna go to Tour of Utah. I think one, like maybe two guys.
Camp.
It was like a tryout camp.
Yeah.
So Cullen got to go out to Bend, Oregon, was where the race is, and also that's like where Horner is based. And so, anyways, it was just this super cool thing. Like Cullen went out there and like he just like sent it, and
stay with Horner, so I lucked out, and he's like, Johnson was like, we don't have a house for you to stay at. The house where all the kids are based at is Horner's in-laws, and they go, but it's full. And he goes, so you're gonna have to stay with Horner. And I was like, cool, like that's awesome, like I don't care. And so we get there, and it was like Megan, his wife, his, you know, Horner, and then his kids. And I show up, they, you know, get me a room, and then it was like the Tour de France was going on. And so every morning he would wake up and he would make him and I breakfast before training. And it was always two breakfast burritos with bacon. Like, who's cooking bacon every single, like he takes the time to cook bacon in the morning. And so he would cook these awesome breakfast burritos, and then he'd sit, we'd watch the Tour de France stage, and he'd just be critiquing it, like doing what he does now, where he does the announcing, but he would just be like, what is he thinking? And like, and then be like, all right, we gotta go train now. And so that was like, what an experience that was. That was super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So then did you get the call up for Tour of Utah then, Cullen?
Yeah. So we did the training camp, and then we did the Cascade race. And in that race, Horner said, you're my right-hand guy. I want you to stay on my wheel. You're not to get off my wheel. When I get food, you're getting food. I had never had that in a race before. It is unbelievable to have the entire team. He would line our whole team up, and you're sitting in the very back. And then our buddy Connor McCutcheon, who is just like a powerhouse rider, he had just gotten back from China, where Griffin and him were racing. And he was just getting us Snickers, Cokes, the whole thing. And then it was like on, I forget the day that finishes up on the volcano rocks. I'm forgetting what day that is, but it's like the big climb that you do. Yeah. And he just like, I just paced him the whole way up. And after that, Megan brought us Subway sandwiches. We were sitting in his Suburban, and he was just like, from now on, he goes, don't hang out with those kids. You just hang out with me. And I was just like,
dang.
Like, yes.
I'm in.
And so, and then Johnson was like, hey, you're the, his guy in the mountains for Utah. Like, so start, you got to start training. So that was my first, basically the way Johnson had like told me was like, I was a Cat 3, and he told me, if you win Cascade as a Cat 3, I'll bring you on to Airgas. And so I did that, got on to Airgas, and then he said, hey, I want you to try out for this selection. And so I went to that. And then my first pro race was Tour of Utah with Horner as his climbing guy. And so
not only that, Payson, so like that was like one of the years that like Horner was going for the win. So it was like we were riding as a team that was protecting the GC rider, Horner. And so like the queen stage is you start Park City Co, right?
We started No, we started downtown Salt Lake City. Okay. And then you went up Emigration, up Big Mountain, over like up Browns Canyon, then up Marsac, and then across down Big Cottonwood, and then you ended up at Snowbird at Little Cottonwood.
Gnarly.
But so like that was the biggest climbing day, and I was there. I was on the same team. And like, dude, Colin, it's like to this day that his like that is his most best day on the bike, because like we had other guys on the team, but everybody just like as soon as so there's a climb out of Park City, and it's maybe you've done it. It's like it goes straight up like the belly of the beast. It's just like boom.
Yeah.
And and like and it was on. Like, it's not like a time of the race where it's like la di da. And the only rider there at that up at the top of that before you go down Big Mountain was Cullen, and damn. It was like he was like there with like the top dudes in the world, and like that's the thing with Cullen is like he's this hitter that nobody knows, like, well, I don't want to say that nobody knows about, but
now they it's do. Just
yeah, I was but no, it's just it's like we gotta get him racing full time. That's the thing. So we're working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but for those that aren't like getting a picture of it, if there's one thing that those of us around you guys for a bunch of years know, it's just how much talent you have. Like, you guys are just like have talent like falling out of your ears, and we've known it. We've known it forever, and like you'll have it, but it's also an example of like how fragile it is to make it to the highest level. Mm-hmm. Because without a doubt, you guys have, both of y'all have the talent. And it's just so unusual for like these little inflection points within someone's life for it to actually come about. Like,
yeah.
it just as easily could have been Colin that won a stage of Vuelta Colombia, or, you know, Griffin that was like on absolute fire as Horner's, you know, right-hand man at Utah. you could just kind of interchange you guys, I feel like, depending on where you were in your life at that given time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you've both like shown these like just incredible ability over the years. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that it's so cool that you are both kind of coming back together in the way that you are now, kind of with the same mission. Like, obviously, you're both really fired up to win races. Griffin's been doing a decent amount of that the last couple of years on the gravel side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me so excited to hear, Colin, that you have interest in getting back to that and focusing on that a bit more as well.
Yeah.
I guess what I'd like to talk about at this point is kind of how this idea for Opicure started to come about. And how your awareness around opioid, what's the term? Opioid
use disorder.
Yeah. Use disorder. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
How it kind of made it across your radar in a way that you actually wanted to involve yourselves.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, we read headlines, there's crazy documentaries on Netflix. You know, it's all around us.
Yeah.
All of us probably know someone. But you guys decided you actually wanted to direct your energy towards it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I got my nursing license and decided to, because we had done the Tour of Utah races a couple of times, we had stayed with the Swinsons, Keegan's, mom and dad. And every time that we did that, it was just like before the Tour of Utah race, it was like this amazing experience riding out here. And quickly, I was like, this is like the ultimate place. Like, I would love to, if I was going to work as a nurse, I'd love to work here. And so we were staying with the Swinsons, and I told Jordan, Keegan's dad, I was like, God, I'd love to work at this hospital. And he was like, you know, totally, let me link you up with a few people to go talk to. And I kind of basically, from his contacts, they just said, like, apply to every floor, apply to every place on the University of Utah hospital floors and see what kind of comes up. And so I did that. And then one of the season ended, one of the trips, I had like a week, and I decided I was going to drive up and just go to every floor and introduce myself to the floors. And so got on a nice outfit and I just started going up to every floor. And then one of the people on the floor, they were like, you should go over to the adult detox unit, which was at the Neuropsychiatric Institute, which is a part of the University of Utah Hospital. And so that's like their psych facility. And so they're like, they have openings over on the detox unit. So I drive out there, go in, and the way that those, like a psych hospital works is it's a locked facility. You can't just walk in. And so the manager calls me and she's like, her name was Cheryl. She goes, so I hear you're here for an interview. Like, would you want to come up and chat? And I was like, sure. So first nursing interview, sit down with Cheryl. And she is like, we just like clicked. Like her and I, we clicked. It was everything that I was wanting to do, like detox. Like she said, it's like the ER, because that's where my background was in as an EMT. She's like, this will be a perfect place for you to learn. And so that was kind of like, that was how it happened. It was just like a drive up to Utah, got into this crazy interview that was like a kind of like a jumping around all day long until I landed over there. And then the rest was history. And it was, you know, the detox unit, I had no prior history working with detox and it's, you know, drugs and alcohol. It's a psych facility. So there's a lot of mental health variables that are included into the detox world. And as I was working, I quickly realized that this was a really special field to be working in, because you were getting individuals that were arriving at their very worst. This was like rock bottom for them. Not only were they very sick medically, they were very not doing good mentally. And so it was like, and a lot of times it's these amazing people. It was athletes, it's business professionals. It's like people that you would never, you know, think that would have problems. And they're telling you these stories and it's like, Jesus, like, you know, you like you said, you see how it's so common, but nobody wants to talk about it. There's that stigma against it. You kind of like, nobody really wants to, it's hard to talk about. And so during that time, I was noticing one of the big things that was coming through was, you know, people that were struggling with opiate addiction or opiate use disorder. And it was just crazy. It was like, it shows no bias. It didn't matter who you were. It could get you. It wasn't just like, you know, I think people think it's like people on the streets, you know, that wasn't the case. It was like moms would come in and, you know, had families and they were functioning and they were doing everything that they did normally, but they had this addiction. So I knew it was a big problem. And then I think where it really hit home was when we learned that our cousin, Matt, who lived back in Pennsylvania, that he was struggling with a heroin addiction. And so I was seeing it firsthand in work. And then I was hearing all of the stories from what Matt was going through. And it was just tough because, you know, our interactions with our cousins from, you know, it was like at family gatherings and when we were a lot younger. So the Matt that we kind of knew is just like, he's super funny. He was just a ton of energy. And so to hear these stories of that, he was really struggling and that he was with like this different group of friends. And like, it was just like, you could see the slippery slope he was going down. And then, you know, I remember my dad talking to his brother and he was just like, it's like, when are we going to get a call that he's, you know, that something bad has happened? And then that eventually happened. And, you know, we got that call that he had overdosed. It was a bad batch of fentanyl that had gone out to the community. So there was like a number of people that it affected. And so it was like kind of right at that time, Griff was out here. He was living with me. And we were just out to dinner, I think it was like a noodle spot, like a ramen. And we were just sitting there and I was just like, it's like, you know, you just think, God, this story just sucks. This is such a weird thing that can happen to people, that they can just be this awesome person. And then this disease can take over their life and ruin their life. And then they're gone. And so we were like, well, maybe there's something we can do that's different a different approach, a different tool that you could incorporate into the recovery process. And we're like, well, what, like what, you know, what could we do? And then obviously Griff and I were sitting there, we're like, well, God, the bike's like rad. It's done so much for us. Like, what, look at what it's done for us. And so, you know, we're sitting there going, God, look, you go to all these different races, you have this community, you meet new communities, you challenge yourself, you're working hard, you have these goals, you meet these goals, and you're accountable. And so then that was kind of when OpiCure was born. It was like, we were just sitting there going like, okay, this makes sense. Now, how do we do it? And that was when we kind of got to work. And that was when OpiCure was born. Just, I think seeing it firsthand in work, having it, you know, hit home, close to home with our cousin Matt passing away, and then just saying, okay, let's try something and just jump all the way in and see if we can start helping people.
Yeah. Yeah. So for you, Colin, you know, the direct relationship and awareness of all that makes sense. Like you literally have had a career in it. For Griff to go all in too, I think is interesting, because obviously you have this racing career. I think, you know, obviously it was going really well, won that stage of Vuelta Colombia, I think, not too much before this idea came mm-hmm. about. Why did you decide to craft this, your race program, like your actual yeah. career aspect of cycling, around this foundation and this goal as well? Was it kind of like, I mean, for those that aren't familiar with the pro road racing scene, like it's always sort of a tumble dryer. Like even the best teams in the world, you know, they'll come and they'll go, or there'll be mergers. Like it's always a little fragile, I mm-hmm. guess, the entire infrastructure. And obviously you'd been a part of that too, like everybody, where you were on different teams. Were you just kind of like between racing opportunities and this seemed like an interesting avenue to go, or did you like walk away from some other opportunities to pursue this? How did your commitment come about?
For me, I think it was a couple of things. It was what you just mentioned, how it's this constant, you know, opportunities come, opportunities go, and you're knocking on doors, you're not getting answers, you're wondering where the next contract is. That after a while gets pretty tough. And so I was dealing with that at the time. And then always like talking and, you know, saying to Colin, like, man, like it would be so cool if we had our own thing. We wouldn't have to worry about it. Like we'd have our own program. We'd be doing something good. Like this just makes sense. But as well, when COVID was going on, that was the season after, it was after the Colombia race that I was on Team Illuminate on. But then I was also on 303 Project with Colin, and I had a pretty darn good season, like a fourth place at Utah. And then like COVID started to flutter in, and like no teams came about. Like it was like I had like probably one of my best seasons and nothing came to fruition. And then pretty quickly, Colin mentioned Cheryl, his nurse manager, and he mentioned me to her plenty of times because he's always, you know, talking with Cheryl, telling her about all the cycling stuff we're doing. And she was always telling him, we got to get Griff working here. And so I, once the teams dried up and once COVID started coming in, my parents were like, you need to help Colin pay rent. And so I finally went in. And so I actually got a job as a psych tech. And so the only criteria you have to have, because I don't have a background in the medical field, but I do have a degree from Fort Lewis College, a bachelor's degree in Spanish. And I told her that, I was like, I don't have, you know, a psych degree or anything like that. But she goes, it's not about that. It's about doing good work and being there and listening to what the needs are for the patients and kind of being that foot soldier on the unit that helps the nurses and helps everything kind of run. You're like the lowest man on the totem pole, but you're also, it's still an important role that helps everything run. And so I worked there for almost, I think about 2 years. I was at the same hospital as Colin. So we would have shifts. Yeah, we'd have shifts
working
together.
Somehow working together. And we
found our way back. That's amazing.
And times when patients would come up to me kind of ticked off. And
they were mad at me.
I quickly learned that they thought I was Colin. And so I would say, I'm so sorry, but I think you're confusing me with my brother. So, but I could show you over to him. So it was, you know, it was the same thing though as Colin. It was a personal, it affected us personally. And then having that experience of, because I would work mostly on the behavioral floor, which was dealt with depression. But then I would do a few shifts over on the adult detox floor. So I was actually, I was getting some experience, not to the extent Colin was, but was sort of, you know, in the same field. And then with all that, with everything with COVID and then just, you know, doing the team thing over and over, and, you know, going from one team to the next. And then that was actually, I stopped working there. And that's when I went over to Europe finally to try to do the whole Europe thing. And I got that chance. But when I went over there, it just, there was, it was so fresh off of COVID that we did, I was there for a visa stay, so 90 days. And I did two races at the beginning, which were just insane. They were up in Denmark. And just, it was an eye opener. They're 1 day races. So it wasn't what I was, what I had been doing up until that point. I'd been doing a lot of long stage races, a lot of days back to back to back. But it was an opportunity to go over there. So I said, well, I'll at least give this a shot. Maybe I can get to, I always would want to go to Spain because I can speak Spanish and like there's a lot of stage races and stuff. So, but yeah, so the whole time I was over there, I did three races. And so that is ultimately what kind of brought me back to the US and then made me be like wanting to jump full in on OP Cure Foundation and everything that we're doing now. And so that was like, Colin was like, dude, there's gravel races going on back here in the US. You should come back. You should do a few races and see what happens. And so that's what brought me back from Europe. And I was like bummed out. I thought that was it for racing.
Well,
and
he
so,
didn't even want to race. Wow. Like it was,
I didn't want to race. Him,
I was like, just do a gravel race. And he's like, whatever, I don't want to do it. Like, because at that point, gravel was like all we had seen. I had always seen, you know, you doing it, Payson, and everybody else, like this, like, mass of people kind of starting to gain traction into it. And, like, and I was like, dude, Griff, I think you, like, this, like, you might be built for this. Like, these are kind of, like, your style of races. And, like, I was like, just do one. And I think you did... Cedar City was your.
I did BWR Cedar City.
Well, and didn't you beat Stetna and you won that thing? Was that your first
one? The first one I did was the year of COVID year 2020, and I was fifth, so I was on the podium. But it was like Stetna, or no, it was Keegan, Stetna, and then two other guys and me. And I was like, okay, like maybe this is pretty sweet. And then, and that was the only race that year. And then the following year, I ended up getting second at the Cedar City race. And then I got second again last year. So I got some unfinished business with that race. But
But I mean, you've really quickly, kind of asserted yourself as like one of the 10 guys that could just win on any given day, like no matter the race.
Likewise.
And going into... Going into this year, you're in the Grand Prix too, which is super awesome. I know there were more than a few of us last year that were like, man, why is Griff not in the Grand Prix? Like, this guy's insanely good, everybody. So I'm stoked that you're in the Grand Prix this year. But anyway, I remember sitting down with you, Griff, in Durango. I don't remember what year it was. It was a few years ago. Yeah. And you're kind of explaining this idea of OPCure, and I sort of like understood some of it, but I wasn't totally sure what y'all were going for. And then, you know, here we are today, having finished your first full year with another rider on the program. And, you know, it's becoming this well-known nonprofit effort. And, you know, Griff, you're out there smashing results and making sure the people become familiar with the foundation name. And I know, Colin, you're doing a ton of back-end stuff, and it sounds like going to be joining Griff at some events and doing some smashing of your own on the race front. But I just think back to that little meeting that I had with Griff and just knowing how much work had to happen between then and now. And it's so cool that you guys committed to it and, you know, really rolled up your sleeves and are are getting after it. Can you talk a little bit about how the first year went? I know you worked with Lucy, mm-hmm. I believe is her name. Can you talk about how you became familiar with her and what it was like to have her on the program and kind of the goals surrounding all that?
Yeah, I think a lot of, so once we had the idea, we got to work, we got our 501c3, which was huge for us. And then we kind of started thinking, okay, like what, how do we want to approach this? Like, what's the best way to incorporate the bike as a tool for an individual's recovery? And one of the things I kept hearing on the detox unit, when I would propose this idea to patients, I would say, you know, what would you be interested in something like this, a program like this? And they'd always say, like, hell yeah. Like that, you know, I love riding bike. You know, that was the best memories of my childhood, was riding a bike. And then they would follow up with, but there's no way I could afford it. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I've got to pay for my treatment out of, once I get out of here, like I can't buy a bike right now. So I quickly knew, is like, we need to eliminate that barrier and we need to just like provide a bike for an individual if they come through our program. So we got lined up with Canyon Bikes, which was a godsend. You know, the support that they've had from the beginning, you know, Blair, the head of the US Canyon, he was like fully behind this idea. And he's like, okay, how can we help? Like, let's really try to push this thing. So, so essentially we had this idea. We go, okay, let's team up with a gravel racing series, Belgium Waffle Ride. We connected with Michael Marks. We, you know, he said, let's do it. This can be your arena. And then Canyon was like, we'll help with the bikes. And then all of our partners, you know, we got lined up with like Kenda, and they were like, we'll do your tires. And so it's like, it's been so cool. I think when you start finding all these different partners and it's in the beginning stages, like just getting the stuff you need without having to, you know, we don't have a huge budget. So just having that support is huge. And so we kind of developed this program. Our goal was to bring a rider to four events, four Belgium Waffle Rides. We were going to provide a bicycle, all the gear, all the travel, all the lodging, and the experience, giving them a pro experience, getting them coaching. Like, we wanted to recreate what we got to experience on like the road side of things. We wanted to give that to somebody who had been through such a hard time. And so we put out an application. We got a bunch of people who like applied. It was super hard to choose because everybody's awesome. And it's like,
Sorry, hang on. I'm going to pause real quick. So how do you talk to me about that application process? Cause I mean, that's that in and of itself is a crazy thing. Like, I have to imagine, you know, folks would have some hesitancy because they're like, who are these guys? And obviously, dealing with these sorts of challenges, these health challenges, could be a really private matter. How did you go about even finding applicants?
So what we did was we created like a pretty, like, not a crazy application, but basic, you know, the basics, like, when did you first ride a bike? You know, tell us your first memory of a bike. Like, tell us what, you know, your background and your, you know, how's your health right now? Like, are you on medication assisted therapy for your recovery? You know, the basic kind of questions. How long have you been in recovery? These were all things that we kind of wanted to factor into our selection. And then USARA, which is Utah Support Advocates for Recovery. It's like such a long acronym, but basically they're in charge of like all of the Utah's recovery services, and they have like a Facebook page, and a lot of the recovery resources are linked up with USARA. And so, Mary Jo is the CEO of USARA. I connected with her and she's like, make this application, we'll get it out there and we'll pump it on our Facebook page and we'll just see kind of who applies. And so we got the application made, we pumped it out, and for a while there was like nothing. And I remember calling Mary Jo and I was like, Mary Jo, like, we don't got anything. And she's like, that's normal. Like, this is a tricky community. Like, you know, like I remember when we did our first walk, like marathon fundraiser, like nobody showed up. And so a little more time went by and we started getting people trickling in, like some applications. And that was really fun. That was a fun part of this project because it was like, it felt real now. Like we were learning about these people, reading their stories. And so as we were going through the applicants, the one that stood out the most to us was Lucy. And so Lucy, she's, you know, originally from France, grew up in the Pyrenees. Her first memories of the bike were that, like, her parents didn't want to drive around with their kids in the car to vacation. So they did bike packing kids growing up. Yeah. And so she was like, I love the bike. Like, that was my favorite thing in the world. And then, you know, came out here to Park City to teach English. And, you know, the same kind of thing, a lot of loss, a lot of stressors, being far away from home. And like we hear so often, had a leftover pain pill prescription from an injury that her husband had. And it was just at the house, which is actually one of the highest percentage of like how people kind of get started is just like a leftover prescription in the house, which is why they say, you know, get rid of those like when you're done. And so we reached out to Lucy and we're like, hey, we think you'd be great for this. For this first inaugural year, you've got, you know, he had done the Lottoja, which is like that big ride they do here in Utah. So we knew that she could probably take on these events. And for our first year, it was like, we thought it'd be really cool to have someone that we knew could really like take these things on and like, let's just see. And so she came to us. The only thing that we were like, we were like, this could be really interesting to see how this goes, was that she had 60 days in recovery when she came to us, which is very early in an individual with in recovery. And so she came to us. We got her set up with a bike. We got her schedule kind of planned out. And the first race we went to was actually Mid-South. That wasn't a part of the racing series, but we just wanted to do it because it was like, we were excited. And so we went out there and she did the race and it was like, you know, 100 miles. And I just remember like she crossed the finish line and she was just so pumped, like fist pumping. And like, and then I remember she told me at the end of that day, she's like, hey, she goes, this works. Like, I'll tell you right now, like, she was like, I was dealing with a bunch of shit before this race, with like visa stuff. And she goes, I've never felt more like I wanted to use again. And she goes, and for the first hour, it was in my head. All I could hear was that the bull crap of like the stuff. And then she goes, and then it just went away. And then she said, for the rest of the race, I got to just enjoy myself. I was talking with people at the pit stops. I was in my zone. I had my music going. And she goes, and I got to escape that. And it was like, she goes, you're onto something. This works. You keep doing it. And so I was like, okay, like, there you have it. Like, here's someone who's early in the recovery, had a big stressor right before this event, said she wanted to use, did the event, and like literally was on the bike and the bike cleared that for her. And so that was like when Griff and I were just like, okay, this is awesome. Like this could work. Now we got to just do it and like keep doing it and recreate it. And so, so it was like a great year. We got to do the Belgian waffle rides, San Diego. We got her two kids out for the event. And oh my God, it was like, if you could, having her two kids are are so cool. And they're, you know, at the finish line waiting for their mom. And I think like, even just seeing that, like she said, you know, she wants to show her kids that she can do this, you know, she can do something super challenging. And like, seeing her cross the finish line, it was like, you know, I don't know whose eyes were dry at that point in time. Cause we were just like, it's like they got their mom back, you know? And I think when I've talked with my cousin, John, so Matt's brother, John got to do a gravel ride with us, which was so cool. And riding with John and talking with John during that event, it was BWR Kansas, you know, he said, what you don't realize is as much as you're doing this for the person that's in recovery, you're also helping the families of the people that are in recovery. They're getting their person back. He kind of said something that really stuck with me. He was like, you know, if they're still alive, there's still a chance. And he goes, and Matt's gone, so there's no more chance to help. And he goes, so like, that stuck with me. He goes, if they're here, you haven't, there's a chance. You gotta just keep fighting. There's gonna be roadblocks. There's gonna be tough times, but like, they're here, so you can still work at it and you can still try. And so that was like, this is just such a cool project. And like, I think that there's so many different dynamics to it. And every person that's coming through, like we have two new riders that are coming on, and, you know, Lucy completed the program. She did amazing. She's now alumni rider. And so she's going to be trying to continue to go to these events and help out with our new riders. And then we have these new riders coming on, and it's like we get to repeat the whole awesome cycle. So,
God, that's amazing. God, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's powerful stuff. So how is it being funded at this point? Is it brand support? I know you have a donations tab on the website, which it's just opicure.org. It looks like opicure.org.
Yep.
How is all that go? I mean, obviously fundraising is so challenging, but in terms of just the sustainability of it, you mentioned Canyon's been a big supporter. Kenda, I know Orange Seal's part of it. Is that kind of how you hope to sustain the thing, is bringing sort of brand and the industry together along with community support?
Yeah. Yeah. So we've had a lot of, you know, our brands are kind of who have lifted us to that budget that we need to get this stuff done. And especially with just stuff like product stuff is huge for us. We had a huge win where Michael Marks through BWR worked with Canyon on getting a Canyon bike for us to raffle off to help raise money. So that was really awesome. That was a big push for us. You know, just donations through the website, that's kind of helped. And so we're making it work with just donations and brand support. But we're just, you know, always trying to look for that big support that could really take us to the next level. You know, we're actively trying to align with a health system so that we're, you know, I think that that's like the next big step for us, is if we could line up with like a hospital, I think that would just push us to another level of support. But, you know, I think that, like you said, fundraising is the hardest part. It's like, it's a never ending battle. And you're always thinking like, are we going to be okay this year? How are we going to do this? You know? And so, that is what keeps me up most night, or, you know, just like, I'm always thinking like, okay, how can we make more, how can we generate more fundraising and more money to create this experience? Cause I just don't want it to go away. Like I think this is too powerful and too cool of a thing to let it just like not happen because we're not, you know, able to, but we're making it work.
I'll be sure Lily puts the donation link in the description here, because
nice.
I'm gonna go donate after this conversation, that's for sure.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. so awesome what you guys are doing. Cool. Well, I think this was an amazing starting point. We're gonna do another recording at some point soon. Well, probably midway through the year with one or both of the new riders in the program. I think it'd be amazing to hear their stories as well. Probably check in with you guys as well, probably into the year, see how Colin's comeback is going, see how Griffin's Grand Prix is going, all that sort of thing. But I'm just so glad we got to finally do this. It's been on the list for a pretty good while. And I'm just such a big fan of you guys. It's awesome that we're still running in the same circles and you guys are doing the amazing things you are. The bike world is lucky to have the Easter brothers in it.
Appreciate that.
Thanks, dude.
Good work on all the hard work, and yeah, I can't wait to see you guys take it to the next level. So like I said earlier, it's opicure.org, opicure.org. I know you have an Instagram that you post some updates to. What is that handle?
That is Opicure Foundation.
Sweet. Sweet. Any other resources that you direct people to at this point? I know there's a couple of YouTube videos out there at this point.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We did a great video with Lucy's story that Canyon worked on with us. And then Griffin did an awesome video with Kenda. What was the race for that, Griff? It was like,
that was at, this last year's Big Sugar event.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Sweet.
And those are, so, yeah, those are on the website, right?
Yeah. And we'll get those up. If they're not, I'll have them up there. So
yeah. And on YouTube. So yeah. If you just type in OP Cure Foundation on YouTube, you can find them.
Amazing. Good stuff, guys. Anything else? I took more of your time than I planned to, but just love catching up with you.
Yeah. No, that was great. Yeah.
No, thanks for having us on. And yeah, like, yeah, it's been a long time of coming, but we're so stoked to finally made it on. So
yeah,
thanks.
Appreciate it.
For sure. Will I see both of you guys at Mid-South?
Yep.
Sweet. Oh boy!
You will.
And if Colin is if Colin's fit, it's gonna be a rough 1-2 punch.
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see how the weather
could
does.
Be. What if it's like one of those rainy ones? You know those, Payson.
Those are those epic. Those are epic. Do a little running now and then, just in case, because if it happens,
just in
guaranteed
case,
running.
Yeah.
Hello again, everyone. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Griffin and Colin. I kept my word right after hitting stop on the recorder. I went over to opicure.org and made a donation. If you enjoyed that conversation and you're inspired by what they're up to, it would be awesome if you went to opicure.org and made a donation as well, or just kept up with all of that they're doing on their social media channels, on the website, on the blog, etc. It's really awesome when really talented racers go out of their way to roll up their sleeves and work for the greater good as well when they see an area that they can really have an impact. So huge fans of these guys, if you couldn't tell already. And I really look forward to following them throughout the year and racing with them too. I want to say a big thank you to Dometic for supporting today's episode. As I was talking about at the top of the show, their Dometic Go line of camping products is just so cool. Something that Nicole and I have come to rely on for everything from picnics to race events. And one of the most innovative pieces that they've developed in this Go line of products is not what you might think. It's just a camp blanket, but it's not any old camp blanket, because if you've done any picnics in the past in areas that have, you know, really wet ground or maybe some pokey things, some sharp rocks, it can be sort of an uncomfortable experience. And Dometic knows that. So they developed their camp blanket, their Go Camp blanket, which has dual surface construction with a soft padded top and waterproof rugged bottom. So it can be used for picnics, as a personal blanket, or even as a weather shelter, as crazy as that sounds. If you want to go check out all of Dometic's Go line of products, you can go to dometic.com/outdoor/dometic-go, and you can get yourself 15% off anything in that category with code STASH23. Big thank you to Dometic for sticking with us headed into the new year. They were a huge supporter last year, and we're so excited to have them on board again this year. Code STASH23 for 15% off. Thanks also to Lily McKelvin for editing and producing the show each and every week. If you'd like to go check out some video clips of this conversation today, you can go to The Adventure Stash on Instagram. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks as always for listening.